listening to Down by the Bank, a Jacksonville Jaguars podcast with Corey, Derek, and JK3.
All right, welcome to Down by the Bank, affiliated with the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This is Corey.
Hey, wait a minute. Did you hear Irv just took
the
USC
job? He's not going anywhere.
What? Is that breaking news?
He's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. Chill. One game and everybody wants to go off the rails. Relax.
Oh, man.
Derek, you called this, though, I think, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I said the courtship and the engagement was going to be great. The marriage was going to be awesome. And the divorce or the annulment was going to be so, I mean, I'm just going off of what, you know, we've seen in the past out of coach. But, hey, it's a bunch of BS. But I had to do that because of just people. And it's like, it's not real unless it's on Twitter. So, you know,
right.
Let's all get, you know, excited about that.
Well, and Jason Lockenfora, whatever, the guy that everybody hates in Jacksonville, he had the story that I guess we assume is biased because he hates Jacksonville and we all hate him. But apparently there's some validity to it. Some folks are backing it up, saying that Urban's maybe getting a little anxious or, you know, kind of going off the handle a little bit about this. I don't know, just the NFL transition in general. I mean, it's only one game, but what are you guys thinking about that report from Lockenfora and just the overall reaction that you're seeing out there from the national and local media regarding Urban Meyer?
Bro, Jason Lockenfora is going to stick to a story and he's going to hang on to one until he's eventually right about one of them. That's what he's going to do. He's going to put something out there and he's going to ride it until it just, you know, either it's true or it becomes out by it being false. He was already exposed by local media here about just like, you know, pretty much just slinging stuff at the wall to see if it's going to stick. So again, this is where he's at right now, you know, with the Urban thing. And of course, if Urban is mad, then good. The team is on a 16-game losing streak now. So, right. Yeah, what is it for them to be complaining about? Yes, you haven't won anything. If you're not upset and if you're not angry about it, then what is it? You guys got beat by Tyrod Taylor yesterday and Mark Ingram and Danny Amendola. Like,
not beat, cooked.
Well, and we'll go into the game, but JK3, you mentioned just to really quickly finish up on the Urban Meyer thing, but you talked about how he's sort of gone dark to a certain extent. Don't you guys think there would be some benefit in coming out and specifically saying in a press conference, these rumors are ridiculous, I'm not going anywhere, I'm committed, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, does he really have to say it?
Why not? It would help, I would think, right?
I mean, it would say just, I would rather him not say something than say like, oh, I'm not going to USC and then end up leaving to go to UFC because he said he wasn't going to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but Derek, usually, how sad is it that he even has to like make that statement? You know what I mean?
Man, but then they'd have to make a statement for every single Jason Locke, whatever you pronounce the name. Anytime somebody from media makes, you know, some type of, you know, trash story or prediction, then a coach has to come out and, you know, say Herb's favorite food is, you know, whatever. And then he's like, you know, has to make a statement. No, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Basically what I'm saying is he doesn't have to answer. And if he knows what, you know, what he wants, here's what probably happened. USC, they hire a firm. Okay. That's how it works. The firm reaches out to all coaches and they're, you know, who they know in their network, and they're in their interest. And then they gauge that from through the coach's representative, not the coach directly, but his agent or, you know, representative. And then the report gets back to him. So that's probably what happened. They reached out to his, and more than likely it was probably a no. I don't get why out of, you know, one game in, he's going to just run back to USC.
You don't? Because
he said, no, I mean, yeah, but, you know, so that doesn't, you know, he came here to do a job. And when you lose the way they did, it's terrible. Okay, it's bad. People there are some people that just don't understand with some competitive nature folks how difficult it is for them to lose. And Urban Meyer is one of those guys. There are a lot of professional athletes that are very, very successful that just don't like losing. And he's one of them to the point where he just loses it, period. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather have that than Gus Bradley walking in there saying, "Hey, we're getting better every day, guys," or Doug Marrone being a puppet, you know, by Dave Caldwell. I'd rather have, you know, a coach that actually cares. You know, he really does. Now, they've got some stuff they got to clean up. We'll get into that. That's the reason why they lost the game, not because our players were just that bad. It's just that they were unprepared due to coaching, whether if it's philosophy, system, you know, whatever. But they were unprepared. They were unprepared. Yeah. And Houston, you know, I don't know if you guys – I haven't seen Lovie Smith in a while. You know, he had the whole beard sporting with the bald head and everything.
Look cool.
He had their number. You know, guy's been calling plays in the league, 20, 30 years maybe?
Yeah.
He knows. So
let's jump into that. So 37-21 loss to Houston, which sounds ridiculous because I feel like when we were talking last week, we were all fairly confident in the episode with JP that this would be – not that we're guaranteeing a win or anything, but I think we felt pretty good that this would be a good start to the season. So, JK3, what went off the rails?
I mean, it got real quick, you know.
Did the train even leave the station?
it got real quick for them, man. You know, I think one of the bigger things that I saw was that there was a fail to game plan, and I think that one of the things that we've seen consistently, I don't know if it's with the Jaguars as an organization or with the coaching staff, I don't understand how they can transition like the power and still have the same product on the field. I don't feel like they did a very good job of game planning. I don't feel like they did a very good job of executing the player personnel decisions as well. And you know, I think from the beginning snap, it just did not look. It looked very forced. It didn't look like they were taking what Houston was giving them. And I think, you know, off rip, you know, having your rookie quarterback out there slinging it for 51 times is not going to get it done. That's way too many balls for him to be throwing. And the reason why they were put in that position is because they kept starting. They had first and 20s. It was like penalty, drop, penalty, drop, penalty, drop. 10-yard completion, 8-yard completion on like a 3rd and 9. You know, so we're still seeing a lot of those mediocre, you know, plays. You know, that are going, but then, you know, on the defensive side of the ball too, you know, they just didn't get where they needed to as far as finishing plays. You know, Tyrod Taylor is probably going to be the least athletic, not athletic, excuse me, the least, like, I don't know, dangerous. I don't know what other adjective to use to describe him, but, you know, quarterback on this that they're going to be seeing all year. And he went out there and was just, you know, chucking and ducking. And you got Andrew Wingard and a couple other guys that shouldn't have been on the field out there actually on the field. And this is where it comes with the coaching plays, like in the coaching and the staff. I think this game is on them. You know, the sloppiness of the penalties. Everybody needed to be on the jugs machine today or tomorrow. I don't care who, you know, if you are catching passes, you need to be on the jugs machine. And then as far as the defense goes, the best play the defense had, well, I won't say the best play, but the most exciting play that they had was when Shaq Griffin almost intercepted Tyrod Taylor like the first or second pass of the game. I was thinking, all right, this defense is really going to probably get after him. Josh Allen got after him, you know, in the first half. But I don't know how many missed tackles Kalyvon Chaisson had. Like, it's just frustrating, man. It's stuff just snowballs.
Bad. Bad position, bad angles, bad tackling habits, just bad. Guys that shouldn't be on the field, guys that just, you know, whether it's another hold by Taylor on the offensive line to, like JK3 just said, Chaisson, the one where he could have, you know, there were two that I
saw. Two.
Yeah, there were two that were just like, huh? Like, what? Like, what was that? So, not sure what he's thinking. And then Wingard, he just needs to go. I said, yeah, if he made the team, I was thinking special teams, not starting safety, okay, not filling a hole and basically getting shook out of the hole. I've never seen anyone, like, fill the hole and then get shook out of the hole. Like, basically the person makes a cut or does something, and you're still in the hole, but you're getting beat. Usually you trip them up. They have to jump over you. You slow them down, something. I don't even think the guy slowed down. He just kept going. So when you really look at that, it's just like, wow. It just amazed me how much, you know, how behind they were because of the fact that they just weren't, you know, making plays. And then when they would recover or they turn around, and it was almost like they had this look on their face like, what just happened? You know, Chase definitely had that look on his face. He was like, what just happened? You know,
that's not good.
It's ridiculous, man. It's just ridiculous.
JK3, one of the things that you had pointed out pretty heavily before we started recording was sort of, and I guess this ties into Trevor too, it sort of put Trevor in a bad position, was the run game. You know, tell us what your thoughts were in terms of their approach to the run game and possible improvements that can be made between now and Sunday.
Well, majority of the time when they were running again, because they were backed up, you know, within that, but you can't completely abandon the run. And Carlos Hyde should not be getting more snaps than James Robinson. Like, I'll die on that hill. And between the both of them, for them to have, what, 13 carries? 14 mm-hmm. carries, excuse me. 14 carries between your two starting running backs. 14 carries, and your quarterback threw for 51 passes. That is as unbalanced as you can possibly get in an NFL game. And, you know, and again, it was because a majority of the time the penalties were holdings. Holding is a 10-yard penalty. So, you know, you have to come back 10 yards, you automatically lose that. So, and I can see them, you know, wanting to throw and wanting to get the passes out there. But what's happened is that, you know, Urban, you're not going to be able to, and I don't, and, you know, maybe it's more of a Daryl Bevel thing than it is an Urban Meyer thing, because Daryl Bevel is the one who's the offensive coordinator. So he's the one drawing up the plays. He's scheming things. You're not going to be able to throw, you know, from a hole like that. You know, only few quarterbacks in the NFL can, you know, throw you out of or throw you from behind of a game. You know, someone that can really will you to a win within their arm. And neither of them are in the AFC South. So to completely abandon the run is pointless to me. But the self-inflicted penalties, like, you can get – okay, so the holdings, you can correct those. You the drop passes, they shouldn't happen, especially if the quarterback, like, and the crazy thing is that this team has not had a quarterback that can deliver them a consistent spiral in forever. And balls being hit in the hands, in the chest, O'Shaughnessy. Like, if you've been catching, like, if you're James O'Shaughnessy, you've been catching balls from Blake Bortles. Like, you've been catching passes from Minshew. You should be able to catch a spiral if it's hitting you right there. DJ Chark, same thing. But I think the biggest thing that really upset me a little bit, you know, in the game was the coaching decisions. I feel, and more particularly, the thing that stood out to me most was in the second half. The Houston had just scored, the Jags had a punt, and it was like within like the 2-minute warning, or there was a play where they had a chance to flip the field and really just, you know, take them down the field or burn off the clock. And they only took 6 seconds off the clock because it was three incomplete passes in a row. Three incomplete passes in the row hit the receivers right in the hands. The Jaguars have to punt from deep in their territory. And like what we've mentioned plenty of times about flipping the field, the Jaguars had to punt deep into the territory. So they go from being down 7-14 and possibly getting the ball back at half and resetting and coming out and making it competitive. Houston scores, and then they scored, and they scored previously before that from a turnover as well. So that's 14 points that are left on the board right there. And now you're down, you know, you're down big time going into the half, and then coming out of the half, you come out with the same mediocrity on the field and you're not able to do anything. And so I'm just so tired of these garbage time stats, these garbage time touchdowns. You know, Trevor threw three interceptions yesterday. I mean, I'm not putting it, you know, on him as much as I can because he still is a rookie, but still, man, the coaching decisions have got to get better. They really do.
Derek, how do you feel about having to hate watch Jaguars games this season, just like last year? Is your optimism gone? Or the only reason I ask that, Derek, is because of the fact that I feel like we felt pretty confident the team wasn't going to be amazing or anything, but we at least felt like they'd be competitive in this first game. Being that they got blown out and we're already talking about the head coach possibly leaving. I'm kidding. That probably isn't true. But being that, you know, those things being the case, you know, what's kind of like your outlook at this point?
Outlook is back to basics. They have to get back to basics. They have to get back to some form of identity as far as, you know, utilizing the weapons that they have. And their biggest weapon, believe it or not, although you got Chenault and Marvin Jones and DJ Chark and Trevor Lawrence, their biggest weapon is in their backfield, is what they need to do. I'll tell you this, getting a little technical here, first and second down, they need to be in a lot of two tight end sets, okay? And you could overload that thing on the right side, okay, to help out. So meaning basically you have a tight end that's on the line, and then you have another one that's off the line. So, and then you can put the receivers, you know, you can put one back on the line on that same side, or put two receivers on the other side, one off and one on. Okay. And just run the stinking ball. And then if you do set up some sort of play action, you really simplify it, really dumb it down. So you have a two-man route, maybe a three-man route. So he has three reads. And if it ain't there, he's taking off running. And if they run the ball, then you run it to wherever, you know, whatever they're doing. They need to be in a lot of two tight end sets. None of this, hey, let's spread the field and, you know, four receivers, three receivers. You got, I think I saw James Robinson split out one time. What is James Robinson doing split out? Tell me, what is he doing split out?
They're trying to make up for the plays that ETN would have been out there being split out, but they're two different running backs.
News and so you flash, can't do that. You can't do that. Okay. So, Mark, I'm saying it right here. They put two tight ends out there, they're a lot better offensively. Again, oh, but we don't have tight ends. Guess what? You better find some. You better do something.
Better resign Tebow.
Yeah. No, you definitely don't want to do that. But for blocking and some receiving, but mostly for blocking, and then go with your two receivers, maybe send one of those tight ends out on a route, and maybe put the back out, and that's it. Keep them guessing. Two tight end sets. When you think about a lot of the quarterbacks that on Sunday that had good games, especially the young ones in the league, your Burrows, your Murrays, Hurts. Let's pick on Jalen Hurts for a second here for the Eagles. Jalen Hurts is not better than Trevor Lawrence. There's not if there's a soul on this earth that truly believes that Jalen Hurts is better than Trevor Lawrence.
Bro, you gotta think. There's a lot of people that live in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and they could keep thinking that and go and they could try to fit 70,000 people into that jail under that stadium. But there's no way on planet Earth that Jalen Hurts is better than Trevor Lawrence. But Hurts had 173 yards rushing from his team. So he looked better than Trevor Lawrence because of that. In the story, there's no, oh, this disgusting. No, in the story, that's just it. So that's what getting back to basics, keep it simple. The KISS method. The KISS method is keep it simple, stupid. And that's it. Two tight end sets. That's what I'm going with. Two tight end sets. And put them both on the right side. Don't even put one on the left and one on the right. Just keep them both on the right to help with blocking.
I think what one thing that helps them instantly get better is going back to it, the coaching decisions. You got to put your best players out there on the field. Like right now, there's nothing you got to be playing. You're playing to win now. You're playing to build this roster. You're playing to, you know, keep some of the players, you know, that you have right now. We're not playing for number one draft pick again. So the adjustments have to be made, and the adjustments have to be made pretty quickly. You know, that coaching decision, again, like by Urban and the team, you know, or Daryl Bevel, whoever the shoulders it falls on, to be able to run, you know, three straight plays and take 6 seconds of game time off the clock to give Houston the ball back when you have the opportunity to swing the momentum is just, you know, it's bush league. It's very, you're not even thinking. You're not even thinking about how you could possibly get back into this game. And I that falls back into what I was saying earlier about them having a game plan and not even adjusting and steering away from that game plan. The receivers were dropping the balls. So instead of me continuing trying to force feed my receivers, you don't have Darren Waller or anybody else on this team. You can kind of force feed and someone will eventually get on track. You have to go back to run the ball between the tackles. If your offensive line is holding on pass plays, all right, let's run the ball. Let's run it. Let's make the adjustments and really be able to get the things out of there and really try to build some momentum and build some positive and stack plays. Stack plays. Just keep stacking plays. That's all you have to do. The first when they scored that touchdown with Manhurts, they stacked plays. They had a very consistent drive, a very balanced drive. You know, James Robinson had a couple of runs. Carlos Hyde had a couple of decent runs. That's where a majority of those runs came from. Like in the second half, I don't remember them running the ball like at all in the second half. Like nothing. I mean, I'm sure they did, but nothing memorable. Nothing that's going to stick out to make you say, well, why didn't you do this in the first half? First half, you should have kept running the ball. Yeah. You got to establish the run in order for you to be a good passing team. And again, there's only a handful of quarterbacks that can really go out there and be a threat with their arm and a team make you respect the throw. And everyone else sets up the pass in order by setting up the run. You have to be able to run the ball in the NFL. That's just the thing. Everyone's talking about it being a points-driven league, blah, blah, blah. If it's a points-driven league and all this other stuff, you know, look at your running backs in fantasy football. Look at the players that are going first in fantasy football. First three, probably. They're running backs. The running back is vital. Mm-hmm. Pass catching is one thing also, but, you know, they have to go back to their skill set, their core skill set of being able to run the football. And they have to be able to do that. I mean, and you can do it if James Robinson had the most rushing yards of an undrafted free agent last year, and you have the same continuity at the offensive line. Like, you should be able to establish a run now and then hit Trevor with the, you know, a play action pass or, you know, RPO, like a run pass option. But there's not going to be a run pass option because they know that he's going to pass it because you haven't run the damn ball. Dang ball. Excuse me.
You guys have any? Oh, go ahead, Derek. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just agreeing with everything. It's upsetting. I'm ready to move on to the Denver game, but
well, I was going to ask you guys. Just are you a little afraid that? And yeah, not to beat a dead horse, I guess, but are you a little afraid that the defense might not be good enough the remainder of the schedule, where we're almost forced out of using the run game at all? And then in a sense also hurting Trevor Lawrence's confidence and the fact that he's going to be constantly back there getting destroyed and passing 40 or 50 times a game.
No, the reason the defense got tired a little bit, they're on the field a lot because when you got a team that's, you know, when you're throwing 51 times and then, you know, your quarterback's only completing about 50 of those, the clock stops a lot for you. So that means you're on the field less, which we were. I think they possessed the ball by us by about 9 minutes. That's a lot. So defense got tired. I think you put Cisco, you get Wingard out of there. You go get the dude that, sells the hot dogs and peanuts and get Chasen out of there and put him in. Then you might actually get some decent defensive play. Besides those two spots, yeah, everyone, you know, had some lapses, but they showed signs. But now it's just a bit about continuity and then coaching. But also, you can't leave, as an offense, you can't leave your defense out to dry. And one of the ways you help your defense is running the football. So anyway,
The defense also was able. The eye test, they passed it for me because I felt like the run. They were stopping the run. But then when I looked at the box score and saw that the Texans had like 160 yards rushing, and a lot of those came on some Mark Ingram, you know, gashes that he had and stuff like that. But that is a product of the defense being out there too long. But I mean, just certain things, man, with the defensive line, like you gotta finish plays. I think they left the most important thing for the defense. They left a lot of plays on the field yesterday that could have been instant momentum swings and more instant, like, kind of, again, confidence builders for the offense that would have been able to. They got their backs broken consistently on third down, by Tyrod Taylor. Consistently got their backs broken, there from him. He had a couple of chances where you were able to sack him, and they did. The defensive line had some really good pressures, but the linebacking core, they just weren't really, where they needed to be at some spots. And again, it goes back to the coaching. I don't think with the middle linebacker, after seeing the play that we saw yesterday, I think it's time for Shaq Griffin to really get in Shaq Quarterman to get in and really just start taking his lumps as a middle linebacker. Now, this is a smaller, or they didn't have a smaller set. They had a smaller sample size of the preseason. So technically, the way that my optimism works as a Jaguars fan, this is preseason game 4. So the next game starts on Sunday against the Broncos.
That's a good way to look at it.
They got to look at this game and look at the tape and analyze it and say, all right, X, Y, and Z, you guys, y'all aren't playing anymore just because this is a regular season game. And look at the effort that you put out there. Offensive line, I think, is still coming back to bite them in the butt, because they didn't do anything to improve the offensive line at all, except for draft Walker Little. And Walker Little was a healthy scratch on Sunday. And he plays left tackle with, so he's in competition with our left tackle right now. The right tackle, Jawan Taylor, I mean, if anybody's looking at those PFF grades or anything else like that, that's the worst grade I've ever seen on a right tackle in my entire life. Like, so I have no idea what's going on the right side of the ball. So even if the Jags brass is listening to this, you need to run to the left side of the offensive line, because that right side is a turnstile.
That's why I said two tight ends to the right. The reason why I said two tight ends to the right.
You got to get out.
Put one on, one off. You could have one standing 5 yards back next to the quarterback. Somebody to the right.
I love how our quote unquote blocking tight end in Manhurts, was making plays on the offense, and the receiving tight end they have, with O'Shaughnessy, just drops. Man, the drop balls are the ones that really really aggravate me, man. Because with like the drop passes that were there, those were instant momentum builders, and those were instant, like, all right, here we go. Let's get back on track with this now. Let's do this. Let's do this now. But yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, I think what we'll do next is talk a little bit about, by the way, I do want to give you props for your optimism in terms of classifying that as our fourth preseason game. And this Sunday,
I'm not giving props for that. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to say it to your face too. That was stupid. Okay.
Oh my God.
Hey man.
That's harsh.
Sorry. I'm not giving up hope yet. It's the first game. I'm not giving up hope yet, but I will tell you though, man. Yeah, that it's return of angry nap season. That 4 o'clock angry nap. Oh, that's some of the best sleep. I slept from 4 to 7 on Sunday.
Well, just so you know, the big difference though this Sunday is it's going to be at home in the freaking 100-degree heat and everything. So it has the potential to. Anyway, let's get to that in a second. First, I don't know about you guys, but this product or service that we're about to talk to you about here in a second is the best product or service that I've ever used in my life. I was thinking about it earlier. I use it all the time. Derek, JK3, what do you think about this next product or service that's in this ad?
I asked you to get creative about the little commercial break.
I was like, what? So is he going into like a Manscaped thing?
What do you guys mean? This next thing is the best thing.
So, side note, JK3's dream, since we've joined the Blue Wire Network, is he wants to say the commercial, and he's hoping that it's a Manscaped.
Just do it now. Let's just do it now. We'll try to get
Manscaped. Is it Manscaped?
Yeah.
You want me to really just freestyle this?
Just do it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Down by the Bank, brought to you by Manscaped. Tell us about it, JK3.
All right, guys. Well, this Sunday's coming up. It's a home game. There's no dome, so it's going to be hot outside. But, I'm going to be all right because I'm Manscaped. So I went on ahead and got the, the lawn trimmer X.0. I don't know which one they have, but you know, I'm going to be good. I'm going to be fresh. I'm going to be ready to go because, you know, I'm going to be yelling Duval, but you know, I'm not going to have a lot of ball sweat, I guess.
You didn't hold back there at the end, but no, that's wonderful. Man. I think that's good. I think that'll secure secure us a contract potentially. Okay, we'll be back after this ad.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, and we're back. And just to quickly leave with another negative note, ESPN's Football Power Index ranks the Jaguars as the worst team in the league and in the best position to hold the number one overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft. Granted, I mean, yeah, one
game. It all feels so familiar. But, and again, to get back on the optimism train, last year the first game, we were like, man, you know what? No, maybe we're actually got something on. Maybe we got something going here. You know, we started off, we ended up, winning that first game last year. And so hopefully the tables turn and we just rattle off like 8 or 9 in a row, like right off the bat.
Yeah, that'd be that's great, true. Right? I like that. Yeah, no, I think that does make sense. That is true.
Check in with me on week 9, and we'll talk. We should like cut some of these sound bites and play them in there, in like the week 9 episode. But
yeah, no, definitely. Well, Derek, we have Sunday, first home game of the season, Sunday at 1 p.m., and I'm assuming is going to be just insane hot weather, which I heard
was supposed to be. Biggest... I think it'll be 90.
What's that?
Only 90 on Sunday.
Oh, only 90? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as much as the temperature. It's the fact that the sun is sitting there like literally 5 feet away from your face, which makes it worse. I think that was one of the bigger complaints from the Saints and Packers folks this past Sunday when they played the game at TIA.
We know it was the Packers were complaining about that because they're not used to that kind of heat, especially, the fans that, if they did come down and the team itself. So I had a feeling that Saints were going to do that, not by that much, though. Nobody could have predicted that Aaron Rodgers would play that bad, but the weather might have had something to do with it. The weather definitely could have had something to do with that.
So who knows? Maybe that'll be to our advantage with the Denver Broncos coming to town. But what are you guys?
Teddy Bridgewater, Florida homegrown boy. That sun ain't going to bother him. No,
not going to help
not
us
at all. No, all right. No.
Well, that sucks. What's aside from the Jacksonville fans attacking the Denver media people that are coming to down, what can the Jaguars do, the football team, to attack the Denver defense and put us hopefully in a winning position?
Besides run the football? And keep Trevor upright, run the football, catch the football, and keep Trevor upright. That's it.
You gotta stay away from Von Miller too. Miller, he's a veteran in the Von Miller, Bradley Chubb. They've got a pretty good linebacking core that they run with. So they run a 3-4. So they're gonna have three down linemen and four linebackers. And you would think that with three down linemen, being able to run the ball would be a little bit easier. But, when you've got Bradley Chubb, Von Miller, especially being able to, you know, kind of diagnose everything and see, you know, all that stuff. And to be contradictory to, you know, what we just talked about in the first half of the episode, you know, the Broncos are without a couple members of their corner or their secondary. So I think this would be an awesome opportunity for, you know, the Jags to really just be able to kind of let it fly now. I mean, but again, you got to establish a run or try to put some type of threat of the run out there. But, you know, they've got a couple of banged up injuries, you know, within there. I don't think they're secondary, you know, you've got Kyle Fuller, who's the cornerback, who's, you know, he's good. I think Kyle Fuller is pretty good. I think he came over, you know, from Chicago. So they do have, you know, a pretty decent defense. But, you know, you got to be able to keep Teddy Bridgewater off the field also. He's going to be, in my opinion, two glove Teddy is in that same Tyrod Taylor, like slipperiness, consistent, has the ability to extend the drive, you know, knows where the sticks are on third down. They've got to get off the field on third down. Like, they absolutely have to. That is so backbreaking for a defense to have a team convert third and six, third and eight, you know, just be able to just, you know, pretty much instill their will on a defense. So they definitely have got to, you know, get off on third down too.
Wherever Von Miller is, go the opposite way. Remember, this is the KISS method. Okay. So wherever you see Von Miller, wherever you see 58, okay, number, you're going to be able to recognize him, the back of the jersey, and those thick goggles he wears, or visor, whichever one he decides to wear for the day. Where he is, if he's left, you go right. If he's right, you go left. If he's in the middle, then just go whatever, wherever he is not. You know, for the offense, also you want to, you know, think about reinventing yourself. Obviously running the football, but just making sure that you're keeping them guessing. Because what you don't want is you don't want a team with an exceptional pass rusher coming downhill at you all the time. You cannot get down early. You must maintain. You must keep it close. If it's two scores or more and you start throwing the football a lot, you thought last week was bad. You don't want – when teams historically that have a guy that can rush to QB and they go up big early, it usually gets ugly very quickly because of the fact that they just – that's what they do. That's what they're good at. So – you got to do that. With our defense, Jerry Jeudy, I think, is out. I think he's out for like 6 weeks.
Yeah, him and Ronald Darby are out. So two key players on opposite sides of the ball. Ronald Darby being the cornerback and Jerry Jeudy, the receiver from Alabama.
Yeah, so that I think he was one of the leading targets for Bridgewater last week. So that can play to your advantage. It's the NFL. Injuries happen. So, you know, Denver's going to adjust. So we have to adjust.
It's going
to
be heavy. It's going to be heavy Melvin Gordon and heavy Noah Fant, or Font, depending on how you say it. With Melvin Gordon being able to receive passes out of the backfield and still be able to run, I mean, he's a very serviceable running back. And don't forget, Teddy, if he has to, he will run. I mean, just watching some of the highlights from the Denver and the Giants game last week, he had like three rushes for 19 yards. And, you know, that's 6 yards a carry. If he's in a third down and everything is covered long, you know, he's going to try to use his legs to get out there. Melvin went for 11 for 101 and a TD. So that was good. And then Fant had enough. I think he just had the same amount of targets as Jerry Jeudy, but 10 yards less. So that lets you know that, I mean, Jeudy went 6 for 72. Fant went 6 for 62. So that's letting you know that he is a, you know, bona fide receiver, and he's going to be a security blanket, you know, for Teddy in this offense.
And Jags organization, if I see Wingard guarding Noah Fant, trying to defend a pass against Noah Fant at all on Sunday, you guys are going to buy me a new TV. at all. All right. I'm going to send the receipt to the stadium and expect to be reimbursed if I see that at all. I'm just putting it out there. Just kind of putting it out there. So
I am going to start. I am going to start Noah Fant in my fantasy league this year or this week, only because the Jaguars, they can't stop tight ends. That's another key on the defense too, bro. They the tight end and being able to stop the tight end, you gotta do it. You have to. I don't know what way you scheme it. And even though I was up late, you know, last night, early this morning, watching that overtime victory for the Raiders and the Ravens. Like, how many times they tried to force the ball to Darren Waller was like, we're ridiculous. And I can see this being some of the same thing that they try to do to get Fant, you know, the ball as much as he can on Sundays, because they just can't stop him. They can't stop a tight end at all. Like, they cannot stop a tight end. And this is going to continue to be, you know, a tight end fest where if you've got him or start him against the tight ends, because our defense can't, our backers cannot cover him, at least the ones that are in right now. Maybe if they put it depends, because Miles Jack, you know, he would athletically be able to cover him, but Miles Jack does whatever he wants on the field. So, you know, he's never really where he needs to be. And when he's there, he shows so much emotion that I think it's going to be like some type of defensive taunting penalty or something like that every time he plays. And so, but yeah, I think Fant and Gordon are going to be the keys to the victory for the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying they win. I'm just saying that they're going to be the keys if they decide to, if they do win, it will be because of them. I'm not saying they win, but you know, that's how it goes.
Well, oh God, there.
No, I got nothing. They better win. Okay. Going 0-2. Right now, well,
that was going to be my next point, Derek. Gun to your head. What's our record after week two?
Oh my gosh, a gun to your head.
Yeah, I guess it's not that dramatic, but
what
caliber is the gun?
What caliber is the gun? Are we talking about like a 9mm,
a 9 or 22?
Or yeah, or a Mossberg? Do I have a shotgun in my head?
You're gonna, I don't know. Fine, throw out the gun to your head analogy. Just if you had to pick realistically, not being optimistic or wanting us to win or whatever, what would your assumption be that the Jaguars' record would be after week two?
It's so tough because of you're not talking about just a game that slipped by. You're talking about complete, you know, discombobulation within the organization as far as even getting plays in correctly to where players line up right. The simplest things. So as much as I want to say 1-1, I think I'm going to say 0-2.
Wow.
I'm going one and one only because the mistakes and those things, they get ironed out this week. I think they get ironed out this week. I think that there is a way that they can, especially with Darby, you know, not being there. I think there is a way that this offense can stack plays. I really do. I really think there's a way that they can stack plays. I really think there's a way. And they showed it. You know, Trevor, he was able to do some things that we haven't seen here in a while, being able to step up in the pocket and make the passes. The passes were there. They just can't have the drops. Eliminate the drops, eliminate the penalties, eliminate the coaching mistakes, which in my opinion are all three pretty fixable things or things that you want to start to try to fix right now. And they're pretty competitive in this game.
That's a lot to fix, okay?
All right. The drops.
That's a lot to fix. I know they're professionals, okay, but that's a lot of things. That's a long list. That's a honey-do list.
The drops
for a Sunday afternoon, okay?
The drops aren't hard to fix. The penalties, you know, you chalk that up to a bad game. And then the coaching, I'm telling you, the coaching things are going to be the hardest wrinkles to iron out within the team. The coaching.
I'm going to raise my hand here, and I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to put both my sports teams out here just because you're not used to that, JK3. You're not used to bad discombobulation amongst both your teams, your college and your pro team. Your college team actually is somewhat decent, although they're going to get railroaded on Saturday, but they're decent. My college team, okay, we're discombobulated too. So, and we've been discombobulated for 3 years. So I recognize that.
Is that the lowest? Like, does it get any lower than losing to Jacksonville State? Like, I'm just being honest. I'm asking for a friend. Does it get any lower than losing to Jacksonville State? I'm just asking.
Their flag's still on the field.
Apparently. No, not apparently.
Willie never let that happen. Willie never let another school plant their flag on Osceola.
That's true. That's very true. And that is just plain pathetic. But what sums this up is the fact that one of the offensive linemen proposed to his girlfriend after the game. And, you know, they can say, oh, he had family there and it was the right time. There's more than life. It's just football. I don't care what you did after the game, but that tells me, because if you're about to ask someone for their hand in marriage, I know where your head was before and during the game. And it wasn't on football. Okay. Definitely wasn't on football. That's all I'm saying.
Do you want me to get his registry for you? So you can see
it's all over the place. We don't need his registry. But my point is, I recognize jacked up football when I see it because I've been watching it for like 3 years. And the Jags, for the first time, I was like, wow, they can't even line up right. That looks familiar. Wow, they can't even get a play in right.
That's coaching. I'm telling you,
didn't we call a timeout last week within the first minute or two of the game?
There was I haven't seen that many ineligible formations or illegal formations in a while.
That's why you guys, I was explaining with the two tight end set how to do it correctly. Okay, so if you got one tight end next to your offensive lineman, you can stagger him off, or you can put him on and put the next tight end staggered off. And then if you put the receivers on the left side, you have one staggered off and you have one on. So that's how you line up correctly. And then you can put Trevor Lawrence, you can put him under the center, you can put him in the pistol, you can even go out of the gun out of that formation. It doesn't matter. But when you can't even line up and you're calling timeouts early, that's what I'm saying. I recognize discombobulation when I see it. And that was so we're going to fix that, fix the catching, fix the penalties, fix all the play calling, and we're going to beat Denver on Sunday. That's what you're saying, JK3.
I would love to see that happen.
Yeah, that's okay. Very optimistic. I like okay. It. Very good.
Hey, to see that happen. I love the team, and I want the Jags to win, but I don't think we can fix all of that in 6 days.
So, okay, so what you're saying, all right, 6 days. All right, so if the coaches come in and clean up the things they need to do and clean up the holding penalties, number one, the holding penalties have got to go. Everything else is on, everything else is on the receivers. I mean, we had like 10 drop passes, and the balls weren't even contested. They hit them right in the hands. He was back in the pocket slinging ropes, and like literally, come on, man, they got to fix those. They got to fix that. Skill versus will. Like, you have the skill.
I will apologize if I am wrong, which I hope I am wrong. So I'm prepared to issue an apology on our next show. But I just do not think that we will be able to fix all of that in 6 days. But if you're right, hey, you know me. I never say, oh, yeah, you know, I was right. You know, you need no. I will admit when I am wrong.
Self-inflicted wounds is what led to this.
I can agree with that. Turnovers, yeah. Turnovers also didn't help because he was pressing because we were losing because coaches couldn't get plays in and we couldn't line up correctly and we kept having penalties and we kept holding and Wingard was in the game and Chaseon was doing ballet and, you know, all these other things.
Urban Meyer looks so angry, too. Do you remember seeing him on the sideline? His facial expressions, it's like the least motivating thing.
Rightfully so. I mean, what do you
you have to appreciate
the practice for? Like, what do you got? You guys have been doing this stuff since June. you guys have been doing installs and everything else like this and since June. And it baffles me, like, how you can come out and not have and line up correctly. You guys have been lining up and doing the same install since June. So I can see his frustration and see that, you know, that right there. The drop passes, there's no excuse for those at all. But, I mean, again, we can continue to go back and forth. I think, you know, there are some hard meetings that hopefully there are some hard meetings that happened, you know, today. I thought there were some, I hope that some people looked themselves in the mirror and really said, do we really want to go 1-15, 1-16 now? Again, like, the roster is way more talented than the 1-15 team that was here last year. Way more talented.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think at a minimum, I mean, aside from hoping that we'll win, it will be good to be back at a regular season game after last year's COVID season. You know, we've had the preseason game and the scrimmage and everything, but it'll definitely be fun to be back at a regular season home game. One, to see who I'm sitting next to with my new seats that I have, because that's always a risky gamble. We can see all the things we like to see, like the non-aging saxophone guy. I'm a Jaguars B t-shirt salespeople and the horribly priced food, among the other things that we all get excited about. JK3, I know you'll be tailgating at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is.
Yeah. But for real, all the listeners that are listening, I don't know if this is probably the wrong thing to do, is tell them where I'm going to be.
Could be.
But I will be in tailgater's lot. You know, so either that's where we're going. We're going to be in tailgater's lot. So if you guys are tailgating out there, you know, come on by, grab a beer. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we get to, you know, do all that. That's for you too, Corey.
I know you usually get,
yeah.
Appreciate that. I would think that would be,
even though most of the times, like when we like 2018, 2017 to 18, like I'm there. And I get there obviously like at 7 or 8, and then I get a text from you like saying, "Oh yeah, I'm just crossing the Hart Bridge right now. RIP to the Hart Bridge, but it's not there anymore. Or well, it is there, but the overpass isn't there." But anyways, yeah, it's like 1:15. Oh, I'm just not coming into the Hart Bridge. It's like, what?
1:15? I never sent you that text message. I get there earlier than that. Give me a break.
I'll go into it.
Yeah, please do.
I would say 20. You just started, I would say, 2018. 2017, you were late. You were a late guy. 2018, you just started getting there.
That is false.
I don't know, man.
You'll have to pull screenshots of that. I don't know about that. I mean, I wasn't getting there at 6 o'clock in the morning like you are, but I get there at least by noon at a minimum. There was probably once or twice where I was a little bit behind, but not 1:15.
He'll do a lot of the pregame festivity things with his daughter.
Yeah. I know. It just started in 18.
Now, see, we're not professional tailgaters like you.
I'm okay. Not a professional. I'm just a guy that likes to cook.
Oh, man. But no, it's definitely, you know, excited to have football back. I tell, you know, people all the time, I love living in an NFL city. I love that we have a team, and I want to see them succeed. Can they fix 6 things in 1 week, or however many numbers? Can they fix the honey-do list for us in 6 weeks?
It just keeps getting further and further. It was three, now it's six.
It's 6. Yeah, it's gonna be 9 by the time we get. Yeah,
by the time you guys listen to this, it'll be 13.
But no, that's just. I hope I'm wrong. And I hope I apologize to you guys next episode.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, that will probably do it for today. We will definitely be back at some point after the game Sunday to recap, hopefully, and look ahead to week 3, hopefully with a win under our belts, but we'll see how it plays out. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. We had a couple new 5-star reviews, so thank you so much for the people that jumped on there and left us the 5 stars and the written comments, which are always fun to read. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, leave a rating and review. We're also on Spotify and Google Podcasts as well. And again, we are affiliated with the Blue Wire Podcast Network. And I believe, JK3, you did mention mentioned that at the tailgate meetup that you're going to be demonstrating the Manscaped product for everybody that's interested, you said?
Not live.
Oh, not live. Okay. All right. Got so be sure to meet up with him and check that out. Anyway, we'll talk to you guys next time. Thank you.